First case is Regents of the University of Minnesota versus Gilead Sciences, 2021-2168, Mr. Haug.
If it pleases the court, Edgar Haug from Haug Partners for the appellant, the Regents of the University of Minnesota. Good morning. We seek reversal of the board's decision finding the claims of the 830 patent invalid over the Sophia reference on the grounds that there was a lack of written description. We believe there was legal error there by the board for failing to find ipsis verbis support for challenge claim one, which is the claim one of the 830 patent.
Ipsis verbis, this is the opposite. The provisional disclosure that you want to rely on as a written description of 830 is a compendium of organic chemistry. It's got everything in it.
The provisional application, P1, is a very broad disclosure, no question. And claim one there is a very broad genus claim. However, the claim at issue here and the disclosure at issue here that we focus on is claim 47 with its multiple dependencies.
Dependencies. You mean you have to go through a whole tree to possibly find the written description for 830.
It is explicitly disclosed, Your Honor. If you start with claim 47 and you follow through those multiple dependencies, you will find, and it's clearly set forth on page 12 in our brief, that if you go through five or six claims, dependent claims, you find all the substituents together as claimed in challenge claim one.
Only if explicitly there. If someone told you which of the manifold choices one should make.
I think the patent attorneys...
It's like a maze.
I think the patent attorneys who drafted the claim in the provisional application are informing you how to do that. Together with, there's also testimony from Dr. Brancali, which is another issue on this appeal, where he says a POSA would understand, looking at the P1 and P2 disclosures, that it would lead them right through the claims to challenge claim one. There's no question here, Your Honor, and I think the board got very confused here, because when you follow claim 47 with its multiple dependencies, they're disclosing many, multiple subgenera. And the board came to the conclusion that there was no ipsis verbis support, therefore we have to go to a Blasemarks test. Legal error in that step, because under Ariad, which is controlling here, under Ariad, if you show that there are common structural features to all the species, or the subgenera in this case, within that genus, that satisfies Ariad and shows possession of the invention. The board here never even addressed that, and they went right to the Blasemarks test.
So would you contend that the Formula 1 of the provisional is patentable, if that were the scope of the claim?
You mean in the original claim one, the broad claim one? I think it would satisfy written description. However, the checks and balances that we are all very well aware of, I think you'd have an enablement problem, for example.
Why would it satisfy written description?
Because it's clearly disclosed. The inventor wrote out the claim and everything included in that claim, so that clearly evidences and shows that the inventor was in possession of that invention. Whether or not it's patentable is the next question. But here, claim 47 is a much, much restricted, much narrower claim, even though it is by itself a broad claim, no question. But claim 47 is much narrower than original claim 1. And claim 47, if you follow through the multiple dependencies, which I think the court, as a matter of law, you have to do, and the board didn't do properly, if you follow through, you will wind up, you have to come to challenge claim one. As I was starting to say, there are multiple other subgenera that you can also follow through, the multiple dependencies. However, there was an extensive debate in this case about how many embodiments are disclosed here. UMN, University of Minnesota, contends it's 168 subgenera, possibly 300. Gilead started at 7.5 million, then they went down by 3 million to 4.5 million, And now I'm not even sure they think it matters. In other words, it doesn't matter. It's not a question of how many embodiments are embraced by claims. It's whether or not they're disclosed properly under ARIAD, whether there's evidence within the four corners of the spec that the inventor was in possession. So, and clearly he was.
So in terms of determining what the invention is here, and so that we can ask whether there was a possession, disclosure of possession of the invention, is the invention here the invention described on Appendix 546, the present invention provides compounds that act as antiviral or anti-cancer agents?
That is the invention.
The invention. Okay, so what is it about the 168 that distinguishes them in terms of potential antiviral or anti-cancer properties from the broad scope of Formula 1?
Well, again, claim the 168 subgenera embraced by claim 47 are much narrower than claim 1. And also point out there were three other IPRs filed here by Gilead.
I understand that it's narrower, but I'm just asking in terms of the likelihood of antiviral anti-cancer activity, is there anything in the prosecution history here that shows that the 168 are more likely to have antiviral or anti-cancer properties than the very broad Formula 1 genes?
I think there is. If you look at NP2, it explicitly describes specific values for the various different substituents that are claimed in Challenge Claim 1. And those specific values are taken together, show the efficacy that Claim 47, or that subgenera that we're now talking about, has for the treatment of the cancer or the tumors, as you are asking, Judge Dyke. And I was starting to say, there were three other IPRs here which were denied based on prior art with respect to this claim.
Counsel, a claim to a very broad genus of chemical compounds requires a representative disclosure of species within the scope of the claim. You're not arguing even that the provisional has that. The provisional has, what, maybe 23 compounds named out of millions and millions within the scope of the broad claims. But you're not arguing specific population.
No, we're not arguing
a variety of species.
We're not. I think we.
There are no examples here within the scope of Claim 1 of the 830 patent, right?
I think that's correct in the sense that there isn't a specific example directed to that. There are examples using different substituents, certainly, and there's disclosure in NP2 for specific values that do reinforce and do set forth all the substituents of challenge claim one as taken together for the whole claim. It's all there. And the board went into this Blasemarks test.
You mean it's all there in terms of substituents, but not particular compounds?
There are no particular, correct, other than, well, each substituent, if you take the substituent, it's the compound. I think those compounds are recited.
Well, you've got an R1, R2, R3,
right.
4, 7, X, and each one is a multitude of possibilities?
Well, there are multiple possibilities, but it's not undue multiple possibilities. And again, it's a question of written description, Your Honor. What was the inventor in possession of what he's claiming in challenge claim 1? And when you look at claim 1 and you put it against claim 47 and go through the multiple dependencies, there's one-to-one correspondence. There's nothing missing. Unlike In re Rushing, unlike Fujikawa or Novozymes, which are all cases that the board relied on, cited and relied on and misapplied. Rushing, genus, the species claimed is not disclosed. Not the case here. The same with Fujikawa. There was a genus, subgenus, then they tried to claim something that was not disclosed. Not the case here. Novozyme goes to functional limitations, not
now,
the case
here. In the 830 patent, R2 was Halo. In the provisional disclosure, yes, Halo was there,
yes,
but with a whole lot of other substituents. So that's hardly a description of Halo in conjunction with R3 being hydroxy and R5 being an amino acid, when each of those, again, is described in the provisional document as consisting of an enormous number of possibilities.
I think the claim 47 and its multiple dependent claims do call out R2, I believe it is, being Halo. That isn't challenge claim 1. It's right there. It's claimed. And yes, there are other alternatives in the specification. And this is another error the board made, because they said, well, you have to show preference. You have to show that Halo is better than hydroxy. The law doesn't require that. Not in written description. Not under the Blasemarks test at all. That was a mistake. The law requires that you have to disclose the embodiment you're claiming, which we do, together with multiple other embodiments. If I stay with the Blasemark analogy and Honorable Judge Rich's metaphor, blazing the trail to the tree, clearly there's a trail that goes from claim 47 and its multiple dependencies right to challenge claim 1.
Don't the Blasemarks have to take you to compounds that have antiviral or anti-cancer properties?
Well, I think all of these compounds have that. There is no challenge here on utility, for example. There's no challenge here on enablement.
What's the answer to my question? In terms of the Blasemarks analysis, do you have to have Blasemarks that lead you to compounds that have antiviral or anti-cancer properties?
I think the answer is yes, if that's what you're claiming. If you're claiming a compound that has antiviral, yes, I think the answer would be yes. And in this case, they clearly do have Blasemarks, a Blasemark. As I said, and this is dealt with extensively in our briefs, I'm into my rebuttal time, it's dealt with extensively in the briefs that the board misapplied the Blasemarks test. They required preferences. There are no preferences required. You just have to disclose it. And under the Byrne v. Trefellis case, you only have to do that, and then opposer can select what they want. It's there.
Are you also arguing the Blasemarks test shouldn't have been relied on at all?
Yes, because they should have found ipsis verbis support. They didn't need to get to the Blasemarks test. But the board found that there was no ipsis verbis support and said, therefore, we are going right to the Blasemarks test. They skipped over Ariad and didn't look at whether there were common structural features here in these claims, which they should have done, and had they done that, they should have found ipsis verbis support. That was legal error. Instead, they went to the Blasemarks test. And even the application of the Blasemarks test was done erroneously. They added conditions to it that the law doesn't require. Preferences, and they got into the numerical limits and started talking about 168 is too many, and they relied on Rushig. It's not about numbers. It's not about numbers. And again, of course, we also have take the position that they violated the APA Act, in particular, by not addressing very key arguments that were made by the parties, particularly UMN, about the IMAC decision, which is the same patent, which is invalidating this patent, and the same set of facts, very comparable set of facts. In the IMAC case, you had 12,400 compounds disclosed.
Counsel, you have a Blasemark in front of you.
I do. Thank
you. Mr. McBride.
May it please the Court, Scott McBride from Bartlett-Beck on behalf of Gilead Sciences. Your Honors, this is a case where the written description requirement worked exactly as it was intended. We have here a patent prosecution that after 10 years in front of the Patent Office added for the first time a claim to a subgenus of compounds designed to capture Gilead's then only recently developed drug compound, an approved drug compound, sofosbuvir. It's a subgenus of compounds that as a whole is found nowhere in any of the priority documents. None of the 24 so-called representative compounds fall within this claimed subgenus, and there is no data for any compound within this claim subgenus.
What about the argument that you can trace claim 47 back through these multiple dependent claims and you could come up with a compound that meets the current claim?
You can, Your Honor. With hindsight, as the board found, you can go through the sort of tangled spider web of multiple dependencies, and you can find a combination that would give the claim subgenus. But that kind of hindsight mixing and matching of choices off the laundry list of options in the multiple dependencies is what Fujikawa said did not give written description to any one of those choices, and that this court in FWP found with similar multiple dependency formats was inadequate to provide written description for a specific subgenus or species within a subgenus.
Now, counsel, if the provisional application have had this very broad genus, and if it were identical to the genus in 530, would that have been an adequate written description? I'm sorry, 830. Would that have been an adequate written description of the claim in 830?
If they'd actually written out 830 claim 1 as a provisional claim in P1, it would depend, Your Honor. We'd certainly be in a different world. We'd be much closer in the sense that there would actually be ipsis verbis disclosure of the claim subgenus. And in most, if not all, instances, that proves to be enough, especially if we're talking about ipsis verbis disclosure of a species. But I don't know that a naked ipsis verbis disclosure would necessarily overcome all the other problems that this patent has with respect to the breadth and lack of specificity of the disclosure.
And you don't think it would have needed a sufficient number of examples populating the scope of the genus?
That, exactly. When we talk about the highly bespoke fact-dependent inquiry for written description, we're looking at the context of the specification as a whole. And having examples within the scope of the subgenus written out would be the kind of context that would say, yes, if in our inquiry 20 years later, we would say, yes, this inventor is showing a special interest, is showing that they conceived and possessed this invention. That's exactly what's missing here.
Well, is a special interest the test, or is the test of possession of the invention whether the claimed subject matter has antiviral or anti-cancer properties?
Well, you're...
It's not just... I mean, you can't get a patent on the compound without relating it to the utility.
Certainly not, Your Honor. I mean, one of the requirements and whether or not it gets folded into a written description inquiry or we treat it entirely separately, they certainly would have to show some utility for the millions, billions, quadrillions of compounds that would fall within the claim.
Okay, but is there anything here to suggest that the 168 are more likely to have the desired properties than the full scope of Formula 1?
No, Your Honor. I mean, if you look at the data they have an in vitro assay on three compounds, which has already been described, don't fall within 830 claim 1, but it's a very narrow set of compounds. I would argue it doesn't provide any guidance for a person of skill as to where in the broad chemical space of the different 168 subgenera you are likely, if even possibly, going to find activity.
But proof of utility isn't required here. Utility isn't being challenged, right?
No, utility has not been challenged, Your Honor.
It's written description.
It's written description, which, again, it's very context-dependent, very fact-dependent inquiry. So you would be looking not just at this, in your hypothetical, not just the sort of naked ipsis verbis disclosure where someone just wrote down a bunch of possibilities without showing anywhere else in the specification that they'd actually had possession of those.
Is it this way a person of ordinary skill in the art would not think that this was disclosed because it's not ipsis verbis, it takes some effort to get there, and you combine that with the fact that there's nothing saying it would hit antiviral and anti-cancer activity that supports the conclusion that it's not expressly or not that a fact finder could find that someone wasn't in possession of that invention. Is that right?
Combine the two? I would agree that if you could look at that as another way of seeing this. I think, from our perspective, the lack of ipsis verbis disclosure just screams out from the beginning, starting with claim 47, because it only limits or makes any selections at R7 and is completely silent about everything else. So,
I hear you, but in a simple invention, that might not be a problem.
That might not be a problem, Your Honor. That's correct.
Based on the context.
Based on the context, because again, we struggle here 20 years later to go back and look at a very broad disclosure of a very broad Formula One genus, and then this narrower but still broad claim subgenus, and have to ask, you know, where in this specification of P1 and MP2 do we find some signal that the inventor believed he had conceived of and possessed and invented this particular subgenus? And the multiple dependent claims don't get us there. And you can see it even more when you turn to NP2 and the specific values, because they remove all the dependencies. So there's no path whatsoever. It's literally multiple independent choices at each position with no connection between them. And the university has said that the multiple dependent claims and the specific values of NP2 are essentially one and the same. They are mirror images of each other. So, Your Honor, for these reasons, unless there are any further questions, we would ask that the panel affirm the board's decision of invalidity.
Thank you, Mr. McBride. Mr. Hogg, we'll give you 2 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you. To Your Honor, to Judge Dyke, to your question, claim one here that we're talking about does not claim any anti-cancer or antiviral effects. That is a utility issue, perhaps, and maybe an enablement issue, but those are not in this case.
In the provisional.
It is described.
Compounds that act as antiviral and anti-cancer agents. That's the invention, right?
Correct. It is. And a very profound invention.
You have possession of the invention so described.
It is described in the specification. Dr. Wagner did make the discovery concerning nucleoside phosphoramidates and its impact on the HINT1 enzyme that is clearly described in the patent. It was a great discovery, and he claimed it with multiple subgenera, which is far narrower than original claim one. And I heard my colleague, I think, pretty much admit that if we just claim claim one, that might satisfy written description. Here's this huge claim that probably is not valid, maybe, for a host of other reasons. But that's not the issue here. And that's why they did put claim 47 in. This is typical pharmaceutical prosecution practice. You start with a big genus. You don't really expect to get a claim that broad, maybe. But then you bring it down as you continue to look, and it evolves. And that's what happened here. And claim 47 claims the subgenera, we say 168, and just because there are 168 disclosed subgenera, clearly explicitly disclosed, it's not legally proper to say you disclosed too many, therefore you disclosed nothing. And that is what the board did here. They said, you may have disclosed one, but you also disclosed all these others, and now I can't find my way through the forest. And so therefore, Dr. Wagner lost all of his claims to all of his subgenera that have a common structural feature throughout and consistent with Ariad. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Hogan. The case is submitted.